Well, hello, hello, guys. You're listening to Beauty Bites with Dr. K, Secrets of a Plastic Surgeon. And today's podcast is for all you women out there working hard. Men, too, you can listen. This is going to be all about career building, how to progress with your goals, your career, your profession. We're going to meet Anna Lacomi, who's a distinguished career coach and speaker. She's renowned in how she guides women, especially women with immigrant, first-generation backgrounds, to ascend and climb into senior leadership roles all around corporate America. So welcome, Alan. Sorry. I'm so sorry. Let me fix that. So welcome, Anna, to the podcast. I'm excited to hear how to slay my career.
I'm so excited to be here, Dr. K, and you are absolutely slaying the game. And this episode, I think, will be for the girls who don't just want all your amazing beauty secrets and all of that delicious stuff, but we also want the secrets about how we can succeed in the world, how we can create more stability in our day-to-day jobs, how we can get more money so that we can also afford a lot of the luxuries that I'm sure your audience loves, as do I.
Yeah, it's so true. We need career coaches. And I know that I have many clients who are, you know, they've advanced in their careers to the point that they're in the C-suite, they're CEOs, they're CFOs. They have coaches. People pay for career coaching and just personal coaching. So it's really nice to lay the foundation even for some of our younger listeners or people who are working so hard in what they're doing that they don't take time to stop and reset their brain or coach themselves. Like myself. So we need to talk about this. I feel like men do this. Athletes do this. Very much a, you know, business bro thing to do, to go get a coach to get you in the mindset. Why don't women do this more?
I love that you brought this up, because I think a lot of us high achieving, ambitious women, we pride ourselves in doing it alone. And we're hyper independent and we don't ask for help. And that's part of our independent woman status, right? And so we cling onto that. And especially women from immigrant backgrounds, there's almost like this belief that if we need help or support, that somehow that success isn't as glorious. And I love that you brought that up, because we all need advisors. And I think about, you know, Queen Elizabeth, who had a whole slew of advisors, even astrologers.
Yeah.
And natural for people in leadership, kings, queens, things like that. But then somehow when it comes to us, we're like, oh no, I don't need support. And then, we're on that struggle bus as well, which is something I see a lot.
Oh my God, for women, it is so hard. I can't tell you, like, in the beginning when I was starting out after my graduating from residency, and you're getting your feet wet in your big, busy career. And then I was trying to do it all. I was cleaning the house. I come home at 8 o'clock at night. I'm like, okay, let me do the laundry. Let me put the trash out. And like, when do you create, like, you have to stop all that and create space for yourself to progress as a business professional. You need helpers. You need to clone yourself. You need to, like, think about, like, your free time. What are, so you talk about helping women who are immigrants, and you're the daughter of Polish immigrants, right? You're first generation in America. Yeah.
Yes,
so
what correct.
Was that like, what was that like for you, and how did that immigrant mindset affect how you dove into your career?
So yes, my parents were political refugees from Poland who met in Italy, and then they shipped my mom over here as soon as she got pregnant, because Italy didn't want to be responsible for this little baby. And I have to tell you, I don't even remember which language I learned first, Polish or English. I couldn't even tell you which one was first, which one was second. But I do remember always fully not fitting into American culture. And I remember also feeling the same way when I would visit Poland in the summers. I also felt like I didn't fit in there. So I know, like, I grew up sort of in between two worlds. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And then how that presented, or how that manifested how I approached college and then the corporate career, is I remember vividly, like, having this put your head down, work hard, don't be a problem, don't ask for anything, be grateful for what you have. And what it created was a lot of workaholism and a lot of invisibility for me, because I spent so much time getting the job done of multiple people, but I wasn't getting the credit. And then years later, I found myself stuck in my career, even though my skills were incredible, my work ethic was incredible. I was no longer climbing the ladder because I had made myself invisible by my own doing, mm-hmm. by putting my head down. And I call it workhorse syndrome. Mm-hmm. I was a workhorse. And you know what? Nobody respects a workhorse, unfortunately. The workhorse only gets more work.
That's so hard to hear because it's so true. It has some personal, painful truth to it, right?
I know.
How do women get out of that? Because you sort of get delegated to like, oh, can you arrange the potluck? Or can you help me pick up the coffee on the way to work? And like the little tasks that have to get done. How do you bow out of those tasks? If, for example, you want to be considered at a different echelon of work at, you know.
Mm-hmm. It takes two things, awareness and audacity. So I talk a lot about non-promotable tasks, which is very similar to what you just described, tasks that, and it's a lot of the times women get tasked with those things.
Always.
Always. Yes, exactly. And so we need to have more awareness as to like, what is a needle moving task? What should I be prioritizing? And I do that through the lens of your personal brand. That gives women a really strong filter through which to filter these opportunities and tasks so they know what to say yes and no to. And then it requires audacity. It requires speaking up. It requires saying, no, I'm not available for that. And the personal brand is how you can create that audacity because you can say, hey, sorry, I don't have time to organize the Christmas party because I'm working on XYZ. Mm-hmm. And then suddenly you're expressing what your priorities are and making yourself known and more famous for that. Mm-hmm. Not the Christmas party, but something that the company actually values a lot more potentially. So yes, awareness and audacity. And the amazing thing is once women become aware and that bubble kind of pops, you kind of start seeing those patterns everywhere. Mm-hmm. And then the more audacious we are, as you know, the more audacious we become. And mm-hmm. so my job is to just get that ball rolling in that direction.
How do you do that? So you do personal coaching, then you also have a Career Slayer boot camp. Mm-hmm. What do you do to people to change the mindset completely and put people down the right track?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I do that. A big part of my job is spilling the insider secrets that nobody wants women, especially ambitious, hardworking women, to know. So all this intel in the corporate world, the unspoken rules, these different, the political game that's happening in the background that determines so much, that is what I am here to expose. And that is what I do in my work. That is what I do in Career Slayer Bootcamp. You know how you just had that moment like of the workhorse syndrome? Mm-hmm. I do that times 100 with all these things that, because a lot of the mistakes that us first gen ladies do in the corporate environment, these are innocent mistakes. They're done from our heart, our good heart that just wants to do well and prove herself. But unfortunately, a lot of these things are mistakes that then keep us invisible, stuck, underpaid, and overworked. Mm-hmm. So a big part of my job is exposing these secrets, which I love to do because I had to actually painfully learn them myself.
Wow, that's so interesting that you're saying all that, because I feel like I just organized a pretty big meeting where I did a lot of work. And then it was the kind of thing where it was still like a very much a man's culture. And there was like the old boys network in the back hanging and talking, strategizing. Meanwhile, I'm running around like a chicken with her head cut off doing the workhorse things. And it's necessary to do the work and be a workhorse, but it's also very important to be part of that back bar conversation, or what guys are doing on the golf course. How do women insert themselves into those conversations? And in medicine and surgery and the business world, sometimes, you know, all the guys are hanging out, smoking cigars at the bar, and it feels awkward for a woman to be like, oh, can I join you?
Mm-hmm. How do you so do that? Awkward and so intimidating. Potentially cringe, of course. And this is what we deal with. And then we're like, why can't I speak up? And then we beat ourselves up and it causes this like mental drama. So I also realize,
what the hell? Then if you do speak up, they look at you and they're like, oh, she's so difficult. What bitchy. I could just go like, if when you're like, oh, how come nobody included me in this? Then you get looked at like, what's wrong with her?
been the problem. Mm-hmm. And I've also noticed working with a lot of women from various cultures, there's so many cultural differences too, right? And our American culture is very much the loudest person in the room gets the authority, the credibility, right? Bragging is seen as necessary, right? In a lot of cultures, bragging is the antithesis to what people do, right? Mm-hmm. And so I work with a lot of clients who can't even mention objectively what their skills are or what they add to the table, because even that is seen as bragging, right? So how do we bring all of that together? So what I like to, one of the strategies that I implement is playing a little bit of detective work. So I always send my women out on a mission to first collect data. And what I mean by that is observe, what are these people's values? What is the organization's values? And this is probably not on the website. The website is the PC version of their values. What do they really value? What are their actual goals? And who do you see them kind of elevating in publicly? That will give you a lot of clues as to what they value. And so then my approach is to then help women using their skills and expertise to create talking points on how they can connect without necessarily talking about themselves, but talking about these joint values. That's a lot easier for women to break the ice as opposed to come in there and be like, hey, I just slayed this goal, include me. To come in and be like, hey, you know, I noticed we have an initiative about sustainability and our competitor, I just noticed, released this new thing this morning, blah, 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 blah. Suddenly everyone's ears are perking up. And you have their attention. And you don't have to do that by talking about yourself. You're talking about what you've observed and your detective work that they value, and you're helping connect some dots with them. Yeah. Suddenly you're seen as the expert. Suddenly they might be seeking you out for your opinion. Mm-hmm. So there's definitely ways. I love doing this work because I want more ambitious, amazing, smart women to be in these places of positions and power. That is actually how we change the world. We must first come into the system so that we can change the system.
So very true. I mean, I think it's hard for women to even step up and volunteer and say, I am an expert in that. I do know a lot about that, mm-hmm. you know, because sometimes I'll go to be on panels where, I'm a little reluctant. I feel like, okay, maybe everybody knows more about this artificial intelligence than I do. But then, you know, I make myself go to the table because I'm pretty confident I do my homework. Mm-hmm. And surprisingly, when you get to the table, you realize, like, you know way more than all of them. But
yes, you do. You
can't overcome the imposter syndrome of, mm-hmm. like, how do you do that step where you have to teach yourself that you're good enough, you know enough, and you need to put yourself out there and not be an imposter syndrome victim.
Mm-hmm. And this is so classic, Dr. K, even to hear you say that, I think that's going to give so many people so much relief, right? To hear you, our queen, say something like that, right? And I think this is also the curse of the expert. Do you know who never questions their expertise?
The business bros.
People who have no expertise, they're just talking out of their butts oftentimes, right? But the women who actually have this deep knowledge, it's sort of like that quote, the more you know, the more you realize you don't know. We suffer from that because we know so much. We know how much we don't know. But then you have these people with a shallow level of knowledge who are speaking as if they had invented that, right?
So true.
And so how do we conquer that? It's exactly what you said. You push yourself to show up anyway, and you collect evidence that says, holy shit, I am an expert. Wow, I actually know way more than I'm giving myself credit for. Mm-hmm. So it's about showing up anyway, expressing yourself, and then giving yourself that credit. So your brain starts to have that association with you as the expert and safety in showing up as the expert. Uh-huh. So a lot of people talk about mindset work, and I love mindset work, but action, just like you did, showing up and proving to yourself, that immediately changes your mindset because you just did it and you experienced it viscerally. So I love that you push yourself, and that's what I think fellow ambitious ladies have to do. Push yourself, put yourself out there, and you'll be shocked how brilliant you are, and allow yourself to shine in that way. I just love that. I just absolutely love it.
Very motivating, but it's also very uncomfortable because you're putting yourself, you're going out of your comfort zone. You're becoming vulnerable. You're like volunteering for something that's like a little harder than you're used to. But it's so important for personal growth. Like if you just do not the same thing all the time, you're never going to grow, right? Yeah.
I would also say it's important for happiness.
Yes.
I used to think like, okay, let's conquer imposter syndrome. That used to be kind of my mission. But then I realized, I told my friends, I said, ladies, if I ever don't feel imposter syndrome, just put me in the ground because obviously I'm done here. The mission is done. I got nothing else to do or nothing else to accomplish or grow into. So once I feel like not villainizing imposter syndrome, but seeing it as like that friend and our brain is just trying to keep us safe. Mm-hmm. And kind of seeing imposter syndrome and maybe celebrating it. I know that's radical, but being like, oh my gosh, I am totally feeling imposter syndrome. Wow, that is evidence that I am pushing myself. That is evidence that I am growing. And you know what? Most ambitious women, we love to grow. That brings us not just success, but also happiness. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a win-win. So I want to reclaim imposter syndrome. I think that's another phrase that the corporate world kind of gave us to be like, oh, women and imposter syndrome. I want to reclaim that as a sign that we are pushing ourselves. We are in uncharted territory. This world wasn't made for people like us, for women like us, and we're here. Mm-hmm. And yes, our brain is going to try to convince us not to go out into the lion den, but we are the lion.
It's so true. I think you're right. We don't really ever get over imposter syndrome. And I never get over like a little flutter of butterflies when I go on stage to lecture or, you know, feeling like, okay, I'm in a room with a whole bunch of world experts. What is little old Dr. K going to say? But when I open my mouth and talk, I do realize that, you know, we have very important things to say as women and we have a different perspective. And as you said, which was so important, like, it's the people in the room that are mouthing off that have maybe the least evidence or knowledge, or like they really just are coming from that position of, you know, testosterone, or they just want to be like the first more aggressive type A person. But how do we deal with the type A person without coming off diminutive or not important or mousy?
Yes. So I love this question because I don't think the way that we win this game is by out-mouthing them at all. I don't think we even want to play that game. No. I think what we do is the opposite. So we stand firm and grounded. Mm-hmm. These grounded goddesses that pause before they speak. We capture attention with less words. We speak more intentionally and thoughtfully, maybe a little softly, maybe a little slower. That is how we break through with quality, not quantity. Mm-hmm. Yes. And with our energy, not our word vomit.
Yes. That's so true.
I actually think we have so much more power if we would just stop thinking we have to play their game and we start leaning into our own game. Try to have them try to be magnetic like us. I don't think they can do it. They have to be loud. They don't have other choices. We do. So I love working with women on grounding themselves into their power, dropping their voice, and leaving that proving energy. That proving energy is what causes anxiety and makes us want to try to match the loudness. But when we decide, I have nothing to prove, I am a blessing to this panel. I am a blessing to this boardroom. I am a blessing to this meeting. That's when magic happens.
That's I'm letting that all sink in. When you get there and you're on a panel, though, sometimes your nervous energy takes over. Like Anna could have coached me, and I have all those thoughts in the back of my head, and then suddenly my little nervous, you know, 10th grade voice starts squeaking out like like you said, like the word vomit. What are your thoughts when you're up there and you're on, you know, you're doing your business presentation, you're nervous? How do you focus that down?
Yes. Three things. So number one, preparing for something like that, I would work with you to create powerful thoughts before you get there, so that when your inner critic, that sounds like, you know, Joanne from second grade who made fun of you for speaking up in class, when she starts mumbling in your brain, you have a new programming that you have already introduced into your system and you've been consistently practicing. And so when she does show up, you can flip it back to that belief to counter that. Mm-hmm. That's one. Number two, in the moment, breathing. We cannot underestimate the power of breath, mm-hmm. and giving her and being audacious and taking a minute to breathe. So if someone asks us a question in the panel, and let's say it's, maybe it's a surprising question, or maybe it's a controversial or shocking question, maybe it's actually an offensive question sometimes, what we do is we give ourselves the audacity and liberty to take that deep breath, get that oxygen in that brain, give ourselves that time to switch back into our wise, grounded self, breathe. And then the final thing I would recommend, and what I practice with my clients, and we can use it in the moment, but it's also good to practice outside of the moment, so it's kind of normal, is using mindfulness. So something even like rubbing your fingers like this, this immediately, something as simple as doing this, or even like you can be sitting and have your palm in your lap, but rubbing your fingers like this, this makes you more mindful. And this is what shuts down a lot of the chatter in your brain. When people talk about mindfulness, I believe the word is incorrect. It should be called bodyfulness. Because with mindfulness, what we're actually doing is we're coming back into that grounded body and turning off the mind where the chatter is, so that we can then open our mouths and speak from that ultimate power. So those are some of the tools that I love to use to have women like you show up powerfully in those high stress moments.
That's brilliant. I'm definitely going to try that. You describe your brand as bold, rebellious, and honest, and audacious. I love that new word. How did you cultivate this identity? And, you know, how does that resonate with your audience?
Well, first of all, I'm an Aries. So I'm very, very bold. What, do you know your sun sign?
I'm an Aquarius.
Oh, you're an Aquarius. Okay. So I feel like, so that makes sense. All of your innovative approaches to skincare and being cutting edge. Aquariuses are always like light years ahead of the rest of us. I love that. So I have that Aries energy, and I think I've always had this like boldness and audacity and this feeling like my life gets to be amazing. I get to be successful and I get to be happy. And I've always had this kind of stubbornness, and that's the energy that I bring to my brand, because I believe, especially women with big, big dreams, they usually have big hearts. And so that's what makes me really compelled to say and shake people and say, it doesn't have to be that way. You don't have to play by their rules. You can create your own rules. And yes, you deserve to have the life that you desire in your brain. You deserve to have it. So I think that's where a lot of my fire comes from. And I actually have a lot of fire in my body. I'm a hot person. I've definitely had inflammation issues from being too hot. So I think this is just my full body, full soul experience to be this fiery, bold creature. Nice. In this lifetime.
I think that, you know, it defines you and it comes forth. Like, you feel like a bright, I feel that bright aura and energy of like, yeah, I do feel the fire. So that's really nice. When you're coaching women who are kind of suppressing who they are, or you can almost feel it. Like, sometimes I'll work with a patient and I almost feel like they're holding back and they need to, what is it they need to release? And can you give us like a little framework for how to evaluate yourself? Like, we're approaching the new year. A lot of us during the holidays, we start thinking it's a zoom out time where you zoom back and look at the course of the year. What have I done right? What have I done wrong? Mm-hmm. So like, how do you look at yourself and realize that you're holding back? Mm-hmm. And how do you evaluate for that?
Mm-hmm. Such a great question. So I would say two things that I guide women through to be more themselves, to have the audacity to claim who they are and be who they are and step into that direction, is values and gifts. And so I work a lot to really clarify what are your values, because so many of us, especially first gen ladies, we're operating on someone else's values, cultural values, success definitions. We're operating in these things. And one day we wake up and we might even reach that success and we're like, why am I not happy? Mm-hmm. It wasn't your value, actually. It wasn't your dream. And so number one is getting really grounded in what is valuable to you. And so there's different exercises you can do for that. You can take a values quiz online. They have free ones available if you want to go do that right now, to really clarify what your values are and then start living your life according to them. One value that I found years ago that I finally admitted to myself was I do value beauty. I spent my whole life trying to pretend like, oh, no, no. Meanwhile, I was on retinol since age 20. You know what I mean? But like as women, it's like you have to be beautiful, but don't say that you like beauty.
Ooh. Oh, my gosh. That whole Barbie dialogue, right?
Yes. So when I finally admitted to myself that beauty is one of my values, I was able to indulge in that and create my life of beauty and not apologize anymore. I made more budget for it.
I love that. I'm with you.
This is what I invite everyone to do, especially going into 2025. There's so much changing astrologically in the world. There's so much more opportunity for us to finally be who we want to be. Start with your values and your desires. What do you truly want? Tap into that heart. It's kind of like that scene in The Notebook. What do you want? What do you want? If you don't determine what you want, the world will determine it for you.
Yeah, life is so fast moving. And like, there is an expression that Confucius said, you live your first life until the point that you wake up and realize that life is so, so short. And that's when your second life begins, when you realize that you have only one life and it's so, so short and you need to stop all that nonsense and work, live for you. Who are you? You know?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. So that gave me this beautiful image of like a sword and just cutting through the BS, cutting through the noise. It's kind of like a sculpture, right? Like the statue is in there. We just have to kind of chip away at the marble to reveal it. And so that's, I think, what a lot of us will be doing in 2025. Who am I? What do I want? What are my values?
Yeah, exactly. I think that's so important. Are there other things that you have people do when they're taking an inventory or planning their year ahead? Because sometimes we fall behind because we don't put ourselves on a framework of goals or timeline. Or how important is that to, you know, lay out your goals?
So I used to be obsessed with goal setting. I used to be the goal setting queen, but I think that was part of my workhorse syndrome. I was always trying to prove myself. It was always lose 10 pounds every January, right? All of that stuff. Some goals I didn't even want. Right now, I would say the most important thing for me and my clients is tapping into their zone of genius. Your goals are going to fly out of your zone of genius. And those are the goals that are going to be easiest for you to achieve. They're going to be the most productive, biggest ROI, and the biggest joy for you to achieve. And so I do have systems that I use, including spiritual systems like astrology, human design, where I help women narrow down on their greatest gifts, their greatest innate talents, their greatest skills and talents that they have that they were blessed with, so they can bless the world with them. And so that is the work that I do, is how do we figure out what your zone of genius is so that you can intentionally spend more time there? That's what makes you magnetic. That's what makes you successful. That's what makes you the authority, right? When you have that confirmation of what these gifts are, suddenly your brain isn't questioning it anymore. And you can move on and be you and flourish and bless us, most importantly, with those gifts.
What is your, do you want to talk a little bit about your Career Slayer program and boot camp, or just your coaching in general? Like, what do you do when you take on a client?
What do I do? So I work with women one-on-one. I do executive coaching, and I also do group programs. And I really love the group programs for women like us, because what happens in going back to what we talked about in the beginning about being hyper independent and, you know, maybe not prioritizing friendships or feeling like no one understands us, what I do is I collect the most ambitious, audacious women. And then when you see your experience mirrored in other women, when you come to one of my classes and you're like, I'm experiencing imposter syndrome, even though I just got promoted, why do I feel worse, not better? And then all the other ladies start shaking their heads and going, oh my God, the same thing happened to me too. The relief that is felt, the healing that happens, I cannot do that in a post. I cannot do that in a book. I wish I could. Mm-hmm. It happens in that shared experience. We are a social species. And so I love my group programs for that reason, that it brings us together and really has that healing power of sisterhood beyond what I teach. And I teach fabulous things, but it is that being in that sisterhood with other powerful women that helps us kind of level out and see, wow, I'm actually am doing amazing. And what I am struggling with is completely natural and normal for women with my, I call it Ferrari brains, with women with Ferrari brains.
That's so true. I think it's hard also for women with Ferrari brains to make friends and have a lot of close relationships, and they're busy like slaying in the corporate world, but like they have to go play also and have friendships and build a network around them. It's very hard to do once you leave college or graduate school and like kind of find your people. Any thoughts on that? How to find your support group and like-minded people, you know, women and friendships?
So I would say start showing up in spaces, sort of like you said, you show up for the panels and the invitations and all these places. I would say start showing up in places that matter to you, that are both professional and non-professional. Okay. So one of my biggest, what I love to hear from my clients, a big success for me is when a client is like, Anna, I'm doing yoga once a week. That's one of my biggest, you know, prides right there. And that's an opportunity for her to meet like-minded women who are into wellness, for example, if they're in a yoga class. The same thing happened recently for a woman who she just signed up for a sewing class. She works in finance, but she's at the sewing class now. And every time I see her post on Instagram, my heart melts. So like making space, yes, to show up professionally, but also like you said, that play, that joy. And I think that is an amazing place for women to meet other women. And then me, it's in my human design. I am a connector. I am a collaborator, a networker. I just build community everywhere I go. I've always been this way. And so if you step into my world, you're probably going to be put into one of these groups, whether they are a program or a challenge that I do. Like that is where you can also definitely meet a lot of big women with big dreams and big hearts.
I love that. I've had so much fun talking to you. You definitely have to come visit me in LA. And yes, I definitely want to attend one of your Career Slayer conferences or get some coaching. I think I'm ready for that. Amazing. I think we all are. I think all of us women that are, you know, working so hard, and maybe it's just good timing, like as you've raised your kids, you finish raising your kids, or you're in the middle of raising family, or maybe you're not raising family, you're building career. But like if someone had set me down the right path of thinking and how to do this like 10 years ago, it would be so exponentially different, faster, better, and like just more efficient to guide you, because you have to learn the hard way. If you don't learn with a coach, you have to learn the hard way.
that's why I decided to do this work, because I also had suffered and also didn't, you know, was stuck for years, had bad mental health. I had PCOS for years too. I did that because I realized if I could save women some time so that they could be more successful and have less of that anguish along the way, it will have somehow made it a little bit worth it, what I've been through. So yes, I absolutely agree with you. We don't have to go it alone anymore. And so thank you for recognizing that.
Well, where can everybody find you if they want to reach out and you know, connect or take your coaching?
Yes. So thankfully, there's not a lot of other famous Anna Lacomys. So if you search for Anna, L-A-K-O-M-Y on Instagram, on LinkedIn, on YouTube, you will probably find me. I call myself the Career Guardian Angel. So that's another hint that you found the right platform. And yeah, I would love to connect with you in any of those places.
Amazing. Well, guys, I think this is advice for all of you at any stage in your career to take a step back, do the zoom out, do a little evaluation and personal, you know, checking your heart, and then get some good guides to lead you down this journey. Like, why struggle? That kind of advice is priceless. So that's it for now, guys. Don't forget to find me on my Instagram. It's Beauty by Dr. K, doing beautiful things for people's faces. And I, too, am a fan of beauty. The pursuit of beauty is not vain. It is very important for human happiness and for, I think, achieving our goals. So you can find me there at Beauty by Dr. K. That's D-R-K-A-Y. And our website is the same as beautybydrk.com. I'm going to send you some of our retinol to try. Miss Anna has been doing it retinol since she was 12. You're going to love this one. It's called Diamond Line Refine. It is so cosmetically elegant. It's full of green tea and antioxidants. It doesn't make you dry, tight, and peely. I absolutely love it. And I hope to meet you in person. I'm envisioning that you're coming on a panel with me, that you're going to come lecture at one of these meetings that I'm putting together. And like, boy, it would be so fun to do a little retreat or getaway, I think, with someone like you. So
we'll do the beauty garden angel, you, and the career garden angel, me.
Oh my gosh, I love that. How fun would that be? Well, that's it for now, guys. Stay beautiful.